So what I want to talk to you about is sort of first of all, want to think through how you might actually go about publicising your work in the press, and also think through how you might go about trying to ensure that your work is appealing and interesting to members of the general public. And you'll be pleased to know I'm not going to do a lecture for the next hour or whatever. I've just got some sort of ideas on these slides which I'm going to sort of put across. And I've also got what we need to think about today is how is it that you actually present your work in a way which is going to interest your target audience, which for the most part is probably going to be local people. I don't know, some of you may very well make discoveries which would be extremely interesting to, say, Americans, or discoveries which you think are of national importance, in which case you could then start to think through, how am I going to present what I'm doing, which is really going to catch people's interest. That's something which Leicester University has been doing working very hard on with the Richard III stuff, is how do you actually catch people's interest. So that's what we're going to be talking through today. So from my sort of, small sample of newspapers which I've been looking through in the library, I think there's sort of a couple of kind of categories of places where you can put stuff which I'm going to talk about today. First of all, and probably one of the easiest places to get your material published is the newspaper letters page. So as I was just saying, you see with the Leicester Mercury, for example, it has this mailbox section which covers two pages. And there, they're very receptive to printing information from local groups, whether it's a very long letter, such as this one, or whether it's a much shorter letter. So that might be the first place about that you might consider trying to maybe promote or try to report something about what you're doing and get it printed. The second place, as we've just been discussing, is it would appear that most of these provincial newspapers have something like Mr. Leicester, or an equivalent kind of brand, if you like, or an equivalent kind of strand which appears every day or on a weekly basis or something like that. So that would be the second place to think about, which is where you might contact the newspaper or contact the journalist who does Mr. Leicester and try to work with them to get them to produce a story about your project. That's thing number two. The third thing, and this is maybe we'll get the most focus today, is how do you actually get sort of classic newspaper articles about you? So you can see here the St. Mary de Castro people from yesterday's Leicester Mercury have got just a normal article. It's not a letter, it's not from the Mr. Leicester page, it's just a normal article about St. Mary de Castro. How do you go about getting the newspaper to do something like that for your project? And fourthly, as I said, I'm not going to say too much about this, but at the end of this time, maybe think about the differences between newspapers and journals and magazines and things like that. So one thing which I find quite interesting, and this is something I've been reading quite a lot about with the phone hacking scandal and all that sort of stuff, is where is it actually the news in which is reported in our newspapers comes from? And in 2006, the University of Cardiff did a study called Quality and Independence of British Journalism Report. And they found that actually the majority, 60% of press articles, 34% of broadcast stories, actually is pre-packaged news. So the idea is for the journalists going out with their notebook and interviewing people and actually going to the place where the news event has happened and reporting back on that. That actually only happens in the minority of the time. Most news stories are produced by a journalist who sits at a computer with a telephone and an internet connection. That's where most news stories come from, the majority of news stories. So that's interesting. It tells you that that's quite important because it tells you something quite interesting about, say, how news about local politics and things like that is reported, as we'll see in a minute, that actually journalists don't critically interrogate their sources, they don't critically investigate, they regurgitate, which is extremely serious for, democratic reasons. Journalist Nick Davis wrote a book called Flat Earth News, in which he uses this word churnalism. Nick Davis is the Guardian journalist who broke the Millie Dowell phone hacking scandal. And so what he calls it, what journalists do, churnalism, they reproduce things like press releases and marketing material, and make, as I was just saying, little or no attempt to actually investigate the truthfulness or conduct independent verification. Of course, that does lead to the question, so what is the relevance of this to us? It's an interesting political point, you know, that so much of the content of newspapers is uncritically regurgitated, but why do we care about that as community historians? I think the reason is because quite clearly there is an opportunity here, which is if you actually write something which is interesting and engaging and which captures the attention of a journalist, you have a very, very good chance indeed of actually getting this printed in a newspaper. And this is sort of where my experience sort of comes in here, because when I was a postgraduate student, you see there, there's those posters for the New History Lab. That's something I set up back in 2009, I think. And we wanted to kind of promote this a bit more widely, and to sort of see where we could get sort of coverage. And we did manage to get coverage of this student postgraduate society, which is not especially interesting, if I'm honest about it, in all sorts of places. The reason why is because, you know, we put a press release together which was had all the necessary information in it to produce a newspaper article, and sent it round, and it did get taken up by quite a lot of places. So that's kind of...
And there was a postgraduate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't. Yeah, that would be an interesting exercise, but actually, yes, it was truthful in this case. So that's kind of why I think this is interesting, is that actually there are opportunities, if you go about it in the right way, to get some very substantial newspaper coverage of what you're doing. That's very worthwhile, isn't it? Because, as Marcus was saying, people actually read newspapers, don't they? And you may find you get all sorts of volunteers and all sorts of queries and sort of questions from people reading these newspapers. So it's really worth thinking about this. So this kind of leads to the question, how is it that press releases, which is what you've got sort of on the left of your handout, how do these become newspaper articles? I think there's kind of a series, really. There's a lot of text on this slide, but I'll go through it quite slowly. So first of all, there's the obvious thing that a journalist has to actually receive a press release. That's something which we can talk about in a bit more detail. But do you need to think about that? How are you actually going to get this press release into the attention of a journalist? You have to capture the attention and the interest of a journalist. So it has to be something there which kind of, you know, reels them in. I think this third point is really, really critical. They have to actually be able to write an article using the information contained in the press release. As you can see from this illustrative example I've given you here, they haven't appear to have done any research beyond its content. So you have to give them the things they need to do to be able to actually sit at their desk and write an article without having to do anything extra. They must be able to do this as quickly as possible. They're clearly very busy. Newspaper circulation has gone through the floor with the advent of the internet. So what's happening is that journalists have to write more and more articles per day. Many of them have quotas for the number of articles they write per day. So they have to be able to do these things very rapidly. And also, this is something I'll talk a bit more about. The people writing articles don't necessarily know how long or how much of it's going to be used in the newspaper. So the journalist may write an article which is 1,000 words long, but the sub-editor, so the person who's putting the newspaper together, may cut that down to 500. It just depends on how much space there is in the newspaper on that day. So you need to provide the journalists with all the information they can write, so they can write an article of a long length or a short length or something which can be quite flexible. So in terms of thinking about contacting journalists, I have tried to not go on about Leicester all the time here for the benefit of the actual sizeable minority of non-Leicester people here. Most newspapers, if you actually look either on their websites or, you know, on page 2 of the newspaper normally, or on the letters page, they will have information about the news desk, which is sort of the general inquiries desk, which you can contact with items which you feel are newsworthy. So that would be one of the ways to go about contacting a newspaper or trying to contact journalists. But often individual journalists, and such as the ones like Mr. Leicester or the ones who specialise in sort of local... local news and things like that, will have their own email addresses or their own contact information. So with a bit of research, actually by buying the newspaper and going through it and seeing who's writing what, and by visiting the relevant websites, you can actually find out quite well who you need to be contacting and how it is you're actually going to get the information that you want to circulate into the hands of the right person. Because if you put your information about your local history group, you know, on your blog or something like that, it may not be the case that a journalist is going to kind of stumble over that. So it's actually getting the information to the right people, which is really critical. And from reading around, there's one thing, which I thought was quite good, is that if you're sending an email or a letter, make sure you flag up very clearly, you know, what it is that's interesting about your group in the email or the letter itself, rather than as an attachment, which may well get ignored. So you're dealing with people who've got not very much time on their hands here. I think that's kind of the moral of this story. So I think, if we kind of think about this a little bit more, mindful of the time, if you remember the second bullet point from a couple of slides ago was this issue of how do you actually catch journalists' interest? Once you've got your information, you know, in front of their eyes, how do you actually, you know, pique their interest in something which will actually lead them to write a story or produce something about what you're doing? And so what you need to think about is, you know, what's your angle on this issue? What is it about what you're doing that will really catch people's interest? And that's something you have to think about if you're working within academia. You have to think about that very carefully because your news story, which is, you know, 10 senior academics attend conference at the University of Leicester, that may be very interesting to other academics, but ordinary people are not going to care at all about that, are they? They're going to have no interest in that. So if that's what your press release is about, that's going to get ignored. So if there's some kind of angle about, you know, what is your conference about? Is it about Richard III? Does it have some kind of connection to something which has wider public resonance or something which is in the news or something like that? That will bring in people's interest. Ordinary members of the public may not be very interested in, you know, a prestigious historian publishes monograph with prestigious academic press or something like that, when it's going to cost 250 quid when it comes out. No one's going to care about that, but they will care if you can get an angle which you know attaches into some kind of public issue which has contemporary resonance. So in this case, it's the royal birth, isn't it? The impending heir to the throne or whatever. So you can see here, this is quite a clever piece of. We've really thought about this quite well.
It also brings up the question of timing, doesn't it? Because there may be times when you think it's worthwhile waiting because something is coming up that you can tie into.
Yes.
You're just doing it because you're ready and you think, well, I've written it, but actually, if you hold off for a couple of months, it might be perfect.
Certainly. So, you know, things like anniversaries would be one thing, or if there are any other events coming up or any other issues which you can kind of foresee in the future which would engage with what you're doing. Yeah. Certainly. But if you're writing a press release which is going to be distributed, what we're really talking about here is a short piece of writing. It's probably going to be one side of A4 or not much longer than one side of A4 generally, unless there's some special reason why it needs to be longer. And what you're trying to do is give a really concise outline of the news story which you're trying to sell to the journalist. So give a nice concise outline of whatever it is you're doing, that they can then use that information to produce an article. And with the example about the carers in Leicester, you can see in that press release they've got all the critical information about the time of the event, the location of the event, what it involves, that sort of thing. And that's sort of presented right at the start of the press release. So they've got all that critical information that the journalist needs presented very prominently. And you can see the length here of this thing. I've been able to print it out and then put in another article inside of it. So it's not a very long press release at all. So when we're thinking about what is it we're going to include in these documents that we send to the newspapers, the first thing is you want to have a headline so it actually captures somebody's interest. It doesn't have to be a long headline, probably a shorter headline would be good. And that's the thing which is going to, first of all, you know, identify to the person reading it what it is you're doing. Secondly, near the start of the document, you do need to set out, you know, the angle. You know, what is it that's interesting and important about this thing? What is the one thing which is really important about what you're doing, which interests other people? That needs to be, you know, presented quite early on in the document to catch the interest of the person you're trying to appeal to. You also, and this is really, you know, the rest of the stuff here, it's all sort of the same thing, which is that you then need to give all the key information that a journalist would need to actually go about writing an article about your thing without leaving their desk, basically. So that's, you know, key, any key information, quotations that they can use, as you'll see in this Leicester Mercury thing that I've given you, it's got people, reported speech of particular people. You may think, oh, that's good, the journalist has actually gone out and spoken to these people, or at least phoned them up. No, it's actually the quotes were included in the original press release. So that's something you can do, is try to get a quotation from someone who's prominent within your group, as long as you have their consent. And then also any other kind of additional background information which may be needed. So you're doing about a World Heritage site, so you might include a bullet point, what is a World Heritage site? One of the things in the additional information, which I'll sort of show you in my handout in a minute, is that you can put things like your contact information in there, and also identifying who is it you're actually going to contact. You know, who is going to be the point of contact in your group? Have you picked a good person for the journalist to contact? Someone who can talk accurately about what you're doing, someone who can give a good quote. You may have someone who may be, you know, the leader of your project or something, but isn't actually very good at talking about things in a direct and clear and concise way. So that would be quite an important thing. And someone who knows that you need to flag up Heritage Lottery Fund and stuff like that. That's quite an important aspect of it, which we can talk about a little bit more. I've just got one more slide, and then we can do a practical exercise on this. But you can see that there's sort of a collection of information which it's really important to have included in your press release or in the information you send to these people. What I was just talking about earlier on is that in sort of newspapers, there's this thing called the journalists use called the inverted pyramid technique. They don't know how much advertising a newspaper is going to get on a particular day, and they don't know what other stories are going to happen. So it may be that their article, which is, you know, 500 words, gets cut down to 100 words, or it may be that their article, which is 500 words, gets included in its full 500-word length. They don't know that. So what they do is they use quite a clever technique called the inverted pyramid technique, which is that at the start of the article, they include the information which is absolutely crucial for people to actually understand what the point of this article is. And also in the start of the article, they'll include the angle, the thing which is going to draw people in. So that's, you know, the first paragraph or first two paragraphs, that sort of thing, first few hundred words. You then go on to talk about the quite important information, so information which is interesting and relevant, but secondary importance. You know, it could be axed if absolutely necessary. And then for the rest of the article, for, you know, whatever the length needs to be, is the information which is unimportant but maybe interesting in some way. So background detail, additional quotations, additional information, that sort of thing. What I've called, because the pyramid narrows quite a lot, padding here. So that's something to think about, is that, as we've just been saying, that you know, the text that you send to the newspaper may be 500 words long, but that gets cut down to 100. Think about that process might happen. What is it that you really want to flag up that's going to get into this top section, the crucial information section? Yeah, so that's a pyramid technique. You begin with the crucial information, and then you put in any other kind of stuff later on. And that's something which would influence, you know, the kinds of things you want to really flag up prominently to people you're dealing with in the media, and how you might structure things like press release. Yeah, so what you can do with press, if it's sort of, you know, something which you don't care when they report it, you can put immediate release, and they can write an article about it whenever they want. If you're sending them a press release about an event which is happening on Friday, you might want it to come out on Thursday or Friday, in which case you put embargo until whenever.
Oh, okay.
So you can, right, you can ask them to delay.
I'll be back.
Yeah, an announcement like that. Yes, we've got a few kind of angles coming through here about just thinking about how you can really kind of try to catch people's interest about your project. Mm-hmm. It could be quite a minor aspect of it, but it can really, you know, catch people's interest and draw them into reading more and finding out about what you're doing. So I don't know how useful this is to you, but even if you don't have any intention of, you know, trying to get any kind of press coverage or anything like that, just this kind of matrix here of thinking of a short headline which describes what you're doing, and then trying to think of, you know, what is the really important thing which I want to use to catch people's interest, that might have some more general applications anyway. You know, whatever it is you're doing with regard to sort of your history project, just thinking through these issues can be quite useful. Mm. You can also send press releases to things like radio shows, so BBC Leicester, probably almost all local radio sort of BBC shows have radio stations have a history programme or a history strand or something like that. So you can always send press releases to radio stations as well. You know, so I think these things have general application.